Hi everyone, and welcome to Keyframe, the geek show's dedicated animation and anime and cartoon and stop motion and claymation and everything animated podcast. I am Rob, and today I'm joined by the amazing, the spectacular Lewis.
Oh, thank you. Hello.
Right. Before we go any further, Keyframe is part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, and if you like what we do, because we do like what we do, so if you like what we do, then show your support. You can make a donation, or you can buy one of our lovely bits of merchandise. The links for those are on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and various other places, or just email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And now, on to...
And I want to add something. Share with your friends, man. I mean, like, I have a lot of data on people, and I know how people think, and I've noticed this weird thing where people gone from not talking about anime to talking about anime. And give it a year or so, everyone's going to like anime. You want to be the cool guy that's ahead of the crowd, right? You want to be that one guy who's like, yeah, I knew that podcast before everyone else did. You want to be that guy who's like, I was watching anime time ago. So put it on Facebook. Tell people.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Don't be shook.
Do the right thing.
Do the right thing.
Anyway, on with the news. And in a change to how we normally do things, I haven't let Lewis anywhere near the news today.
Yeah, because I normally know in advance myself, so...
So, we're going to start off nice and easy, right? We're going to start off with Doraemon. Mm-hmm. Now, for some reason, and I'm not sure why, but Nobita, Doraemon, and his friends are heading to Antarctica for their latest adventure.
Nothing there, though.
And when I say they are heading to Antarctica, they basically took a couple of people dressed as Nobita and Doraemon to Antarctica and then started taking photos of them dressed up as Nobita and Doraemon.
Okay, so I have like a question.
Yeah.
Why?
It's part of the promotion of the new Doraemon movie, and I'm just thinking, there's penguins in the background of this picture. Aren't you cold? It's like minus whatever.
Right, I see now. Now I have context that makes a little more sense. It's kind of like, look what we can do. We have resources and stuff. And yeah, I guess some of these pictures look cool. But yeah, okay. I was more thinking like they were going to film something there. I was like, why would you do that? But hey, you know, those big sort of mascot type costumes, they apparently are pretty warm. So hey, maybe it's insulation enough for that sort of environment.
Well, I mean, they went to Argentina first on December the 26th for an event organized by the Japanese embassy. And then the two anime ambassadors showed off their dancing skills in Argentina by doing the Pow Pow dance, whatever that is. And then they...
Sounds Japanese.
Yeah, they left Argentina and greeted the first sunrise of 2017, where the sun doesn't set for half the year. Mm. Yeah, and then they took commemorative photos with local penguins. And the thing is, they make it sound amazing, because on January the 27th, they're going to do the Antarctic Adventure Quiz program. And it's obviously, Doraemon is very much a kid show, right? But loads of adults really like Doraemon as well. And I can understand the need for promotion, but I feel sorry for the guys inside the suits, because I'm pretty certain... Aside from wearing, like, thermal long johns, you know, or a thermal onesie of some sort, they don't have much on underneath those costumes.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I guess there's no way to really know. Maybe they're specially modified for this, but, you know, looking at this picture, I can see climate changes, wonderfully warming effects, because it's looking pretty much like Scotland here, so maybe it ain't that cold. Maybe.
You're saying it looks like Scotland?
Yeah, it does. Like,
I thought that I was about to say, God, the Scottish have changed, haven't they? they're a lot shorter.
Well, they're from UK. They're just waddling around doing nothing in particular, so maybe they're not that different.
Just squawking at each other as normal.
Squawking at and about each other. Yeah, standard fare.
Anyway, moving on to Square Enix, who...
it's pronounced Squeenix.
Yeah, Squeenix. Square Enix have opened a teaser website, and technically this isn't anime news, but it is because I reckon they're probably going to do this as an anime-based game anyway. Square Enix have opened a teaser website for a mobile app game, and it's titled Kimi to Kiri no Labyrinth, or You and the Labyrinth of Fog, or Kimi Kiri for short, and it's going to have a little bit of VR function with it, right? Mm-hmm. So that all sounds well and good. And the website shows the silhouettes of 12 characters on a fantasy world background.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the key thing about this is a game and Square Enix's first game aimed at female players.
Female players?
Yep, specifically at the female audience.
Oh, right, okay. Right.
Now, what's the betting that they've gone down the usual route that everyone who aims a game at female players has done and has basically said, okay, we're going to fill it with bishies?
I'm free.
Yeah, I'm probably free, or I'm free, or I'm Yuri, because Yuri and ice. Need I say more?
But I'm free is more subtle.
Yeah, I'm free is more subtle. But yeah, Yuri on Ice, free, hell, Kuroko's Basketball.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I mean, I find games aren't as bad with it, but it's like, I'm not going to lie, with every sort of Japanese game, and it probably is applicable to Western stuff as well, but when it comes to like anime and anime-style games, they're more open to doing this.
Yeah.
You know, if you just throw a bunch of hot guys in there, especially if they're interacting with each other, like, girls will lap it up.
Yeah.
Like, so in the case of this, like, maybe they won't go completely down that route, but there's going to be elements of it in there because people will buy it.
Yeah. My point with this is literally that it's the same old format. I mean, if you look at games like Hakuoki and the rest of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Hakuoki even had, like, 3 anime series and an OVA. It's the reverse harem type thing, which is still a harem. They can only call it reverse harem because the word harem usually refers to one guy, lots of women.
Yeah, I guess as far as like anime genres go, yeah.
So I can kind of understand why they're pushing it and making a teaser site and everything like that.
Mm.
But I don't know. I've seen a few of these games appearing on like iOS and Android, and it's great that they're making games for female players, but I just think it's the same game for female players that they're making over and over again instead of thinking, I mean, if you look at it, for male players, we have so much diversity, yeah?
Yeah.
We have sports, we have action, we have first-person shooters, and I'm like, yeah, but women can also play those games. A lot of them might not. So why not do some actual proper market research of female players instead of assuming that they just happen to like bishies?
I mean, I've come to sort of realize, like, just now that if you're going to aim, like, something at a target audience, you know, you got to study that target audience and try and make something that caters to them. If you want to make a sports game, you got to get the teams. If you want to make a rally game, even if it's not realistic, you got to make the physics authentic and have the environments be believable. If you're going to make, I don't know, like an FPS, you got to do certain things. But if you're going to aim something at a specific gender, all you got to do is fill it with borderline porn aimed at your target gender. Easy.
I don't know.
And it seems to work for people. Like, that's why the anime industry looks the way it does, and that's why things like Free and Yuri on Ice exist. And it's pretty boring, but it seems when the target audience is, hey, gender, it's just like, well,
yeah. I get what you mean. I mean, the reason I say I don't know is literally because Free wasn't really borderline porn, I suppose.
Well, yeah, I'm exaggerating, but you know what I mean. Like,
yeah, it's just
eye candy, I guess.
Eye candy, I think, is probably a more tasteful version of fan service.
It's more accurate. I was just being edgy. Don't mind me.
I think eye candy is a much better term for it, rather, but. Because when it's the guys being catered to, when it's men being catered to, you know, they'll go full on fan service, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's where Yuri on Ice kind of broke the mold last season.
I guess women like to use their imagination a little bit more.
I think women just have better standards than men when it comes down to that sort of thing.
All right. You say so.
Well, you understand what I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have you been out with some lads and they'll go, oh, check her out. Oh, look at that.
Well, yeah, but you know what? Now I think about it, there's this stereotype when it comes to anime that, oh, anime fans are perverts and blah, 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 and they're all drawn to it for this reason.
It depends on whose waifu is on the screen.
Yeah, it's true. If it's the wrong waifu, it's like, it's terrible. Your waifu's terrible. But yeah, like, the genders ain't that different.
No, they're not. Okay, so Square Enix are making games for female players, which is a move that is kind of overdue, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm starting to realize that when it comes to like anime sort of style games, like we think of them as being aimed at guys, but there seems to be like a fairly solid female audience there. They're just pretty quiet about it.
Yeah.
At the very least when you're not talking to them about it. But when you get to talking to them, they're pretty into it, so you might as well go for it.
Yeah. We're going to move on to Gintama. Right? You're familiar with Gintama, aren't you? It's a bit madcap. It can be serious, it can be insane, it can be all sorts of things. Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, certain Shonen Jump stores are celebrating Valentine's Day, right? They're getting ready for Valentine's Day, and they're celebrating them with large Gintama-themed displays.
Let's celebrate with large Gintama.
Yeah, I know, it sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Tokyo Dome City location has large figures of Gin and Sadaharu, and I love Sadaharu because he's just a big fluffy dog, right? The Yokohama shop is displaying a particularly sweet, they say, life-size statue of Kondo, who is the leader of the Shinsengumi and is in love with... he's basically head over heels for Shinpachi's sister. Otai, and everyone refers to him as Gorilla because he's he's basically an idiot, like a lot of the characters in Gintama. He is just a total idiot. So Gin and Sadaharu looks particularly fluffy, and Gin looks fine.
Mm.
The one of Kondo is the one that I'm a little bit concerned about. So just for you, there you go.
Oh my. Well, I did just quickly Google Gondo, and it's pretty much what I expected.
It's Kondo covered in honey, wearing a...
I didn't notice that until I scrolled down.
Wearing
just his skin tone. I was like, he looks a bit yellow in this picture.
Yeah, he's covered in honey and wearing a fondoshi, which is basically like one of those loincloth underpants. Yeah, and you know, he's got his six-pack and his pecs on display. He's... standing on one leg with his arms out wide and just kind of, why? For Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I'm not really seeing the connection. Like, is honey a Valentine's Day thing in Japan? Because that's the first I've heard of it.
Are they trying to tell the women that they're men, if they really want to show their love on Valentine's, they should cover themselves in honey?
Maybe, but now you throw that out there, it might just be random fan service with a hint of humor to it. But like in terms of a Valentine's Day thematic, I'm just not seeing it. I'm just sitting there trying to figure it out, and I've got nothing.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, just looking at
to make it worse, he just looks so damn serious as well. Just like, you know, like he's just doing normal stretches or something.
1-2, 1-2, flatten that tummy. Anyway, we're going to leave that to one side and move on to the last bit of news from this week. And this is the best bit of news from this week.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this is so good, I was tempted to keep this for the Geek Show, but no, I've decided to steal it for us instead.
Finally, we get to like keep some stuff instead of the Geek Show just hoarding everything.
Yes. The Japanese government's National Center of Incident Readiness and Strategy for Cybersecurity, or the NISC, has appointed somebody as a cybersecurity officer.
Right? Yeah.
And that person, their appointment is part of a tie-up campaign between NISC and a particular anime movie that is coming out in Japan.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
A tie-up?
Yeah, it's a tie-up. It's basically like a promotional thing, right? But this is an actual real appointment as well, which goes to show just how much power anime has in Japan.
Yeah.
Because the tagline for the movie poster says, "We will protect the internet." Would you like to know who they've appointed as a cybersecurity officer?
Sure, why not?
Kirito.
Kirigaya Kasuga, whatever his name is.
Kirito from Sword Art Online.
But he doesn't exist.
Like I said, it's part of the promotional campaign for the Sword Art Online Ordinal Scale movie. And in that, they are basically fighting in virtual reality and augmented reality at the same time. And I'm like, okay, so you're going to protect the internet from what exactly? I'm still not sure what you're protecting.
Jump in there and beat up that virus, man.
No. Are you going to protect it from internet trolls? Are you going to protect it from me? Am I a threat to the internet?
So Kirito, what's his real world role now?
His real world role now is he is a cybersecurity officer for the National Center of Incident Readiness and Strategy for Cybersecurity.
Tell you what, I didn't expect this. I was expecting you to at least like name a person that's actually existent. You know, someone who can actually get on a computer and, you know, do some programming stuff.
Not somebody who just puts on nerve gear and then just suddenly goes, "Oh, look, I have a beam sword and I have a gun and I have, like, long hair but short hair. I have wings. Look at me."
I mean, do you know what? Like, I'm all for, like, the concept of the lines between reality and fiction blurring, you know? Like, as humans, we create art and that, and life imitates art and art imitates life and all of that. I understand, you know? Yeah. I'm not one of those realists who's like, don't get too into a show. There's benefits to that. But, yeah, this is just kind of stupid.
See what I mean?
All right, let me have a look at this. He will protect the internet.
Yes, he's going to protect the internet.
I see. So he's more of a promo thing than anything else. But, you know... Like, is Kirito even good with computers? Because as far as I'm aware, he's just really good at that one game. And he cheats on that anyway, so whatever.
That's my point. He is just good at one game. That doesn't mean he's good at all games.
If anything, he shouldn't be the representative, because he's the one who keeps playing around with the system. If anything, he's the kind of person that should be targeted. He's the one who's a problem. Like, I was playing... you know, the friggin' nerve gear, and there was this one guy, this one idiot called Kirito, and he's just one-shotting me all the time, and I know you can't do one-shots in that game. Like, why is he dual-wielding? He's the kind of person that the internet needs protecting from. People who cheat in online games. He's the problem.
Calm Blue Ocean.
Nepotism. I can't stand it. Cheater.
Calm Blue Ocean, Lewis. Calm Blue Ocean.
Yeah, he's a cheater.
No, but you did bring a fair point. How is he dual wielding in a game where the skill doesn't even exist?
Exactly. He's a hacker. He's the person that cybersecurity exists to protect the internet from.
Do you know what's funny though? When you say he's a hacker, my brain, because I used to play rugby a lot, my brain automatically has a bit of confusion.
Hacker.
Yeah, it has a bit of confusion between the actual computer hacker and the war dance done by the All Blacks before a rugby game. So in my head, I'm like, I've got some fat guy in front of a computer going, "Ah, go party, go party, go."
Yeah, they're not the same thing, but hey, I guess that sort of confusion is just a glitch in the system.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom.
Anyway, let's leave that to one side. That was the news. We're going to take a very quick break there, and... we'll be back with some animation.
Go to hell, Kirito.
Like films? Well, join in Cinema Eclectica, where there's something for every taste. We have myself, Rob, with Asian film that I can't quite pronounce. There's Graham with the European classics that you might never have heard of before. We have Ryan with the messed up stuff. And we have Aidan with Hollywood classics. Everything else is film of the week. So if that sounds like a good time to you, join us on Cinema Eclectica.
This is Andy from Lit V Lightroom. telling you to go and listen to us, where we literally loiter about everything literary, with far too much loitering.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to Keyframe, and we're going to talk about some anime next in the review format style, where we will review anime that we have seen recently, and hopefully you'll have a good time and appreciate our perspective. And we have Rob next with something.
That was a bit of an interesting welcome back.
I'm trying to be like the people on TV and being engaging and stuff, so yeah.
Yeah, I've got a bit of an odd one. It's an interesting one, but it's also a bit of an odd one, right? This is Metropolis. Now, chances are you might not have heard of this one, right? It's one that slipped under a lot of people's radar. And this isn't from the usual distributors either. This is from a film distributor called Eureka. And it's considered a classic now, but when it came out, it didn't really meet with as much approval. It got critically well received, but a lot of the anime fans didn't actually enjoy it as much. And there's a reason for that. Now, Metropolis is this version of Metropolis, anyway. It's based on a manga by Osamu Tezuka. And that manga itself takes a lot of its inspiration from the original Metropolis movie, which is, if I remember rightly, it was a 1927 science fiction silent movie called Metropolis by a really well-known film director called Fritz Lang, right? And Tezuka was so inspired by the fact that they made this silent movie, this science fiction movie, with the, you know, the birth of a female robot called Evil Marie and everything like that, and just this whole idea of this dystopian society. Long before we had this idea of dystopia, you know, in general sci-fi.
Yeah.
Right? You know, Fritz Lang was a bit of a visionary when it came to that sort of thing, and Tezuka was inspired by that and created his own version of Metropolis. And that version got an animated movie. Tezuka wrote the manga in 1949. It got an animated movie in 2001. Right? And it was directed by Rintaro, and the story, the actual screenplay, was written by Katsuhiro Otomo, who is of Akira fame. So, yeah, produced by Madhouse, so it's got some good production values and some good names attached to it, right? Now, the story is very, very simple and actually kind of similar to the 1927 one, in that it's all set in this futuristic city called Metropolis. Not the Superman Metropolis, right?
Yeah.
This is kind of before Superman's Metropolis. The city of Metropolis, you have humans and you have robots, and the robots are discriminated against and segregated to the city's lower levels. A lot of Metropolis's human population, they're unemployed, they're destitute, and a lot of the people blame robots for taking the jobs. Now, when you think about it, it's kind of similar to the UK right now and to America right now and a lot of other countries, where they're blaming, you know, migrant workers for taking all the jobs, you know, and the migrant workers.
Yeah, I thought he was more referring to mechanization, but
you understand what I mean, where they're saying migrant workers are coming over here, taking our jobs, and
they the migrant, our jobs.
Yeah, the migrant workers are kind of separated from society a little bit. And it's strange that Eureka are releasing this around now, but I think it's also quite prescient that they're releasing this now. Now, this is the Steelbook Blu-ray, and first thing I want to get out of the way is I've always liked Metropolis as a movie. I watched it when it came out in 2001, and watching it again on Blu-ray, it is a gorgeous film. It really is a gorgeous film. It's so inventive and so original in its approach, and that is down to Tezuka's thoughts and the way that Tezuka approached things. And you know, there's a lot of Tezuka around the art style. You can see it's a Tezuka, you know, it's based on a Tezuka manga. I'm not saying it looks like Astro Boy, but, you know, when you look at kind of the modern CG version of Astro Boy, you can, it still retains that, you know, that innate Tezuka-ness about it, if you know what I mean. And this is kind of the same. Now, the story is very, as I said, is very, very simple. You have the leader of Metropolis, who's a guy called Duke Red. And, he's unofficially the leader of Metropolis. And he's basically building this skyscraper It's called the Ziggurat, and he's building it for a purpose, and nobody really understands the purpose. But what he's also done, he's also ordered a guy called Dr. Lawton to basically create a machine, a robot that's based on his dead daughter. And that robot is called Tima.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Red wants Tima to work, to function as the central control unit for a really powerful secret weapon that he's been developing that's hidden inside this massive skyscraper. Red has an adopted son who's called Rock, and he leads a particular faction of the government that actually tries to calm the robot population, but they do it with very violent methods.
Mm.
Because Rock can't stand robots. He hates them with a passion. Imagine the KKK, but if they had guns and they were allowed to do what they want within reason.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, so you have this you have this boiling pot where you have humans and robots and everything is just kind of bubbling under the surface, just waiting for a spark to make it explode. And the spark that makes it all explode is Tima.
Mm.
Red doesn't realize that Tima is basically the being that will bring down Metropolis. Into this mix, you have a private detective called Shunsaku Ban and his nephew Kenichi, and they are investigating certain things, and through their investigation, Shunsaku basically gets hold of Dr. Lawton's diary, which describes how Tima was created, and Kenichi meets Tima. And Kenichi doesn't know that Tima is a robot. And Tima herself doesn't actually know that she's a robot.
Mm.
And so what you have this weird relationship that starts forming. Kenichi and Tima, basically, they really like each other. And it's kind of, they fall in love. Tima learns to speak and learns bits of common sense from Kenichi. And Kenichi, he's got a lot of protectiveness towards Tima because she's young, she's beautiful, they're about the same age. And so, you know, the connection forms.
Mm.
What I like about this story, because I'm not going to go any further with the story, what I really like about this is that you have several ideas that are on display here. Number one, the inherent injustice in segregation, right?
Mm.
The fear of what's different. The robots fear the humans because the humans aren't robots, and the humans hate the robots because the robots aren't human.
Mm.
Right? So it's kind of fear of the different and fear of the unknown. You have all these political machinations that are going on in the background, and they're just bubbling under the surface as well. You have Tima, who's thrown into the mix. In Fritz Lang's version, Tima would basically be Evil Maria. But in this, she's a bit more of an innocent. She starts off as a complete innocent, kind of like a newborn babe, a blank sheet of paper. And I like the idea that it doesn't matter whether you're human or not, what you become in life, you know, what you end up becoming is based on the things that happen to you, the things that happen around you.
Yeah.
And I like that little message there. And I like the fact that Kenichi is a character. He doesn't distinguish between robots and humans. He wants them all to live in peaceful coexistence.
Mm.
And I like the idea that this progressive change can happen. People can be accepting. So you've got the two extreme sides of the coin. You have the ones who hate and fear each other. And you have the ones who are advocating peaceful coexistence because that's the right way.
Mm.
And it's all this mishmash. The story's really well told. Don't get me wrong. The story is very, very well told. I love the animation in this. Madhouse did a really good job with it. But then again, you know, it's a Tezuka piece, and if they didn't do a good job on it, then there would have been trouble.
Yeah.
But I think the main thing that I like about this, though, is the fact that it's an intelligent science fiction drama thriller. Tezuka put a lot of thought into the story, and Katsuhiro Otomo has done a marvelous job adapting Tezuka's manga for a movie. He did it with his own work. He did it with Akira and made a great film. And he's done it again with Metropolis. I think he's done an amazing job adapting the manga for the movie. Rintaro has done a great job with the directing. This is one of those anime where, you know how everyone talks about anime that you have to watch if you're an anime fan, regardless of whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
If you consider yourself a fan, you should watch it. I actually put Metropolis into that category for a very specific reason. Outside of stuff involving phoenixes and stuff like that, This is probably the best modern example of Tezuka that you're going to find.
Okay.
And this actually shows a lot of what Tezuka was about, a lot of how he approached particular types of story. I think the best thing about this as well, another reason why I think it's worth watching if you're an anime fan, is the fact that it is inspired by a silent movie from 1927, right?
Mm.
And you can go back and you can watch the original Metropolis movie if you want, or you can just read the synopsis of it. But you can compare the two, and you can see how Fritz Lang's ideas were developed by Tezuka into Tezuka's own story, and how that story was adapted by Katsuhiro Otomo into this movie.
Okay.
So it's not like other movies where it just comes from an original idea and suddenly it's a great thing. You actually have this kind of, what's the word? You actually have this history to this movie, which you can actually reference yourself if you want. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So you can, it's not just the movie.
You can see what they're trying to do, I suppose.
Yeah, you can see what they're trying to do. You can see the path of inspiration, I suppose you call it, from Fritz Lang to Tezuka, and then from Tezuka to Rintaro and Katsuhiro Otomo.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But anyway, this is the Blu-ray Steelbook Edition, and it's got some interesting extras. It's obviously in HD, and it's got three optional English subtitle tracks. I don't know why they need more than one. It's got a making of Osamu Tezuka's Metropolis documentary, which is actually quite an interesting documentary if you're interested in anime production. And it does give you some ideas of some of the difficulties that are involved in anime production. You also have interviews with the film's creators, and you also have, the original trailer and various other things like that. So that's Metropolis from Eureka Entertainment. And like I said, if I had to put together a list of anime that fans should watch, regardless of whether they like it or not, this will be on it.
And would you say it's a very philosophical anime?
Yes. Let's put it this way, Lewis. I reckon this movie is one that you would happily sit down and watch, right? And actually,
is it
think
me personally?
About, yeah, as in you personally. Yeah. I would recommend this to you because you like your dumb action anime, but you also like the anime like Psychopass, where there's a lot more thought put into it. It's a bit more psychological, or it's a bit more philosophical, or it asks questions about human nature. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do enjoy stuff like that. So, and a lot of sci-fi, there's like two types of sci-fi, really. There's the sort of more flashy action stuff, and then there's stuff that's more like that.
Yeah.
It did seem to fit what you said. But yeah, I do like my philosophical stuff. But as you pointed out, which made me laugh internally, I do like dumb stuff too.
Yeah, well, we all do. You know, you need the dumb stuff to balance the more philosophical stuff.
I don't know. Some people are too good for that, man.
Yeah. But anyway, that was Metropolis. So over to you, Lewis.
From one philosophical sci-fi anime to another, Psychopass is what I've been watching.
Yes.
And Psychopass starts off with a scene with a guy, like, taking down some helmeted sort of enemies. And once he does that, he has an encounter with this one man who seems to expect his presence and knows him by name. And this protagonist, I guess, in that scene is Shinya Kogami.
Yeah.
And then he says, "You are Shogo Makashima." And these two guys, they weren't ships passing each other in the night. They were fated to encounter each other. And that's how it starts off. And we're just left with that. And from that point on, the series starts. And I guess rather than giving like a description of, you know, what the show's about, I guess I'll just sort of describe some of the first episode. And it starts off with like a young lady. Her name is Akane Sunamori, and she's, like, doing the sort of adult, I guess, version of, "I'm late for my first day of school," running through the rain, looking a bit of a mess. And she's late for work, and she gets to work, and she meets, like, her superior, I suppose, called Nobuki, I believe, Ginoza.
Yeah.
And it turns out that Akane is on her first day of a job as as an inspector. Like, yeah. You know, like essentially a police officer, and from this point on she gets like a briefing of like, you know, this is your job. And what that first episode does is that it gives you like a fairly comprehensive exposition to what the universe is without it coming across as like a boring exposition dump. It just seems more like a natural sort of briefing that someone would get in this situation. And what Akane has to do is that she has to, as a police officer, she has to go and essentially stop crimes. Now, this is a sci-fi anime, and it's in the future, like 2050 or something. And the police system, the social system is very different at this point. It's in Japan, and it's very futuristic and technologically based. And when it comes to crimes, instead of having like a court system, people are judged more or less on the spot. And as an inspector,
yeah,
Akane must command two enforcers as part of the unit with Ginoza, who also commands two enforcers, and they go around sorting out crimes. And the way they do that is that they scan people's auras with an item called a dominator. And what it can do is that it scans your brainwaves with a cymatic scan, and it determines the mental state of the target.
Is that thing that I've seen?
Yeah, it's the gun. Yeah.
Okay.
And these mental states are given colors, hues, and a value. And if someone's psychopath, which is the name for, I guess, that state, is below a certain figure, they're okay. They can operate in society just as normal. But if it goes beyond a certain point, they're considered a criminal. And at that point, they are recommended to go in for like treatment, psychological treatment, stuff like that. But if they are taken in by an enforcer, the dominator can shoot them and paralyze them if they're above a certain point. And if their mental state becomes even more erratic and it goes above like 140 something, they're considered to be no longer a member of society, and they can be eliminated by a dominator shot. And that's like the basic premise. It's a society where everything that everyone does and is based off of essentially a scan of their brains. Jobs are decided by tests that people do, and they get given an aptitude score, and that determines what they can get into. So it's a society where everything's sort of sorted out in a very clinical and neat sort of way, and it's very convenient. It's very futuristic. They had driverless cars before they were a thing, and they have AI that manages your lighting and your schedule and all of that stuff, and you can talk to it just like the Gatebox that's coming out. So,
well, like Siri and that lot as well.
Yeah, except it floats around your room, so it's holograms. But this is the sort of like futuristic society we're picturing. And yeah, Akane is now a member of the police force as a part of that. And on her first day, she turns up for a job, but they're in the middle of something's going down. They have to go out and, you know, detain a criminal. And they explain the dominators to Akane, and then they just sort of say, "We don't have time for the rookie treatment. You know, these are your enforcers, and they're the ones who'll be doing most of the dirty work. Their crime coefficients have gone beyond a certain point, so they're considered latent criminals who, like, they're not allowed to be free. So they can either work as enforcers because they have the minds of a criminal, so they can figure out criminals, or they can just kind of go to jail, essentially. And these are the people that she's working with. So she takes those guys out, and they go on a job. And it's her first thing. She's green. The viewer is new to this, so they're going through something similar to her. And they're going around looking for someone who's just... He got detected by a scanner. His crime coefficient is up there. They got to face him head on. And this guy... It's very interesting because the guy is doing something very... Like, he has a monologue where he says that he just got detected by a scanner and now he's considered a latent criminal, so his life is over. And at that point, he seems to be just kind of losing it, and he decides, well, I might as well just do whatever I want. So he decides to, like, abduct a woman and rape her, and he's, like, doing this really sort of, like, sadistic stuff to her. But then, eventually, one of the enforcers catches up to him and fires a dominator shot, but he's apparently on some kind of drugs that inhibits the ability for the dominator to work, so the paralysis shot doesn't work. And then they chase him down, and then they eventually corner him, you know, set him up with a dominator to make him think that he can defend himself. But at that point, he's tried to escape, and he's trying to kill the enforcers with a dominator. And because he's in that mental state, his crime coefficient's gone way up, and now he's a target for execution, and he becomes shot to death. These dominators, because they remove people from society, they really remove you. Like, you fire, you explode, you're just like a big slushy red pulp, and then you disappear. And he's taken out. And the woman that he's with is obviously traumatized by the whole experience. She hasn't done anything wrong, but because she's been abducted, being raped, and then she sees that, something called a psychohazard occurs, which is essentially people just like being affected by the mental state and the circumstances around her. And then her crime coefficient goes up. So now she's someone who can be paralyzed and detained. And the whole idea behind the symbol system is the symbol system knows. The symbol system is absolute, and these are the rules we follow. You just do what it says, and everything works out. So as enforcers, you point the Dominator and you fire. That's your job. Like, put very, very simply, and how you get that done is up to you. So one of the other enforcers, Tomomi, who is like, he's like a, I'd say he's in his 40s, 50s, so he's been around for a while. He's like, he goes to aim at her, but Akane like resents this, and she says, you can't do that. And then she physically tries to stop him, but then the woman gets away, and she's in such a horrible mental state, she creates a situation where she's surrounded by fuel canisters and just says, like, if you approach, I'll blow myself up. But Kogami, the guy who's at the beginning, again, he's just doing his job. He walks up to her and he aims the gun at her, and because she's now in this elevated mental state, now she could be executed herself.
Yeah.
Now, one of the parts of the briefing Akane was given was these enforcers, you don't see them as human, you don't connect with them because, you know, there's the risk of a psychohazard occurring. You know, so you tell them what to do, and if you don't like what they're doing, you shoot them. In fact, that's exactly what Kogami said to her. And he's there aiming at this woman, and then he mouths something to her, and he's taking his time. And then eventually, Akane just says stop and fires at him. Takes Shinya out, because he's a elated criminal. He becomes hit with the paralyzer. She convinces the woman to calm down, because if she doesn't, you know, my job is to aim this gun and fire, and if you don't calm down, it will kill you, so please. And then she takes the victim takes her words to heart, and everything seems, you know, calms down, everything seems happy, and then the next thing you know, she is shot. Her crime coefficient's gone down at this point, so she doesn't die, but she's paralyzed. And then Akane gets basically a bollocking for it. Sorry, Akane basically gets a telling off for it.
Yeah.
And that's basically the first episode. And the first episode is good because it gives you everything you need to know at once, and a lot of like suspense and stuff as well. And from like a first time experience, it's, as I said, it's very tense and explains everything well. But when you kind of go back a second time, you start to notice these little things. Like, for example, there's a lot of layabouts, people who'd be considered scum or just like people who don't do anything by our society, and their psychopaths are, you know, not over the limit, but they're kind of up there. But these people just aren't doing anything. And when she scans the enforcers, all of them have crime coefficients that makes them a target for detainment. And it kind of goes to show that despite everyone has a high crime coefficient does so for a reason. But there's all sorts of different kinds of people who are in that situation. Mm. And there's so much that can be inferred from that first episode. Lots of information in one episode, some of it obvious, some of it subtle. And this rendition of psychopaths, like, they, from what I know, they've added some new scenes and like redrawn some stuff and all of that. So it makes it feel kind of fresh, and it kind of changes some scenes to make them more appropriate. So, for example, when I first watched Psychopaths, the woman just kind of fell down the stairs, happened to, you know, bump into a whole bunch of fuel canisters and just happened to have a lighter on her. So it kind of seemed like a spur of the moment thing. But in this new one, she's shown walking into that spot and setting it up. So it seems more of a suicide attempt than anything else.
Okay.
So it's, they made, like, my interpretation of that is they made a point to show how, because of circumstances and because of other people can be affected and be put in a situation where their lives are ruined when they haven't done anything wrong.
Yeah.
So the flaws of the system are far, far more apparent in the first episode here than it was originally. And I thought that was really good. But from there, this is like a one or two part review, which is why I've gone into such detail here. From here, it just kind of shows like Akane trying to fit in with the system, and she is working in this job because she got like a really high aptitude score for it. She got a high aptitude score for a lot of things, but she was the only one to get the highest, like, A grade or whatever for this one, which is why she's decided to do it. But on her first day, she's done a whole bunch of stuff that's, you know, pretty out there, you know, deciding not to shoot people and trying to talk people out. And, you know, the enforcers had, a lot of the enforcers, especially the older guy who's seen a lot of stuff, you know, just said, like, where'd you get these rookies from? What a piece of work. But it's kind of like, in a way that's like, wow, she's kind of challenging everything. And from there, it's them solving, you know, all of these cases that are just popping up and just showing how the system works in practice, you know, a bit of drama and stuff like that. But eventually, as they encounter more cases, some of them involving the internet, involving like a load of people, they realize that there's a connection. And once that connection is established, you kind of sort of heading into the second arc of the season, which is where I am now. But generally speaking, Psycho Pass is really enjoyable. The animation's quite good. The art style really knows what it's doing. It's this interesting mix of light and dark. Like in the nighttime scenes, it's very lots of uses of light, deep blues, grays, some dark reds, and lots of light blues to give a futuristic feel. But at the same time, it's not like super grim dark.
Yeah.
It's really weird. It's familiar but unique at the same time. And yeah. The characters are just really interesting. It kind of shows what happens when you have a social system that's very absolute and very quick to judge and doesn't have a lot of nuance towards it. And I can't say too much now because, as I said, I'm only in the first half, but there's a lot going on the surface in terms of the story. Lots of action, lots of like crimes being committed. It's very interesting to see them analyze the actions of their opponents and how much technology is being used as well. Yeah. Because the enforcers, especially Kogami, he's very good at figuring out the patterns of the target by looking up data like that, like the things that they've been doing, where they've been, any patterns in the sites, their visit and the frequency, and all this information is available to them because they are the government. And just like that, they go, okay, you know, he's been trending this and this and this, but then there's a spot here where nothing's happening. So that kind of implies, based on the motive, that he may be doing this thing. And it's very interesting to watch, but it's very also interesting to see just how much information governments potentially have on people and how they can be used. But overall, I just enjoy it. And the first half is, all of the philosophical stuff is somewhat below the surface, and I think in the second half it comes out more. But
we'll talk about that more when we talk about the second half.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was going to say. Yeah. But I don't know, I don't really have too much more to say. It's a bit of a rambly review, because there's a lot to talk about, but it's good. You should watch it.
Psycho Pass was one of those anime where, like Metropolis, there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of kind of, there were a lot of episodes and a lot of moments where it made you stop and think. Yeah.
Without getting, like, too into it, like, these crimes, as I said, they're separate and connected, but they're happening for a reason.
Yeah.
And that reason, put very simply, is a challenge to the establishment.
Yeah.
And that challenge to the establishment, you know, raises questions like, you know, if we're all just following the rules and these rules are really solid and control our lives, then where does the element of choice come in? And if you can't choose, then
yeah,
what is the meaning of life anymore?
I mean, you have these, since we did have Metropolis and I did mention sci-fi movies, you have these sci-fi movies where you have these ordered societies, things like Logan's Run, where you had an ordered society, you were a Gattaca, where your DNA defined what you actually did. You know, various ones like that, where you have a structure to that particular society, but then under that structure, you have, you know, you have this kind of bubbling discontent.
Do you see what I mean? That's something that's present in this as well, and it's depicted in a very interesting way, because there's breather episodes, like after the first episode when Akane shoots Kogami, because Ginoza, you know, kind of is obviously disapproved on it. She's like all sad and like, did I do something wrong? Maybe I don't fit the job because I'm not doing things as I should do, but, you know, my score says that this is the right job for me, and she confines in her friends in a little bit of a breather episode. but because of the industry she's working in, it's like it's classified information, so she can't get into detail. And it's amusing because she's talking to her friends about it, and they're like, man, I'd kill for your problems. You have, you know, all of these things that you could have entered and stuff. And like, here you are, like, worried that the one thing you got the highest score for, you don't fit. But because she couldn't explain it, they couldn't understand her perspective. But later on, when someone sort of gets involved, they fully understand, because her friends seem to be very good friends to her, but they just didn't get an explanation. But it goes to show how everyone has different problems, but a problem that her friends had is just that they just didn't feel like they had a choice in life. And in a way, it's not too different from how some of us live now. Yeah. And what terrifies me the most is, like, again, it's a futuristic society. They had cool stuff like driverless cars and AIs and stuff that seemed really futuristic when this came out, which isn't that long ago, like 2012. And now it's like, hey, we're going to make this a commercial thing now. Yeah. Like, the scenes where, just to hammer the point home that this is like a futuristic society, they have the whole like conversation in a car sort of scene where they discuss their plan of action. And then you have like Kogami Shinya, who's like, as far as like archetypes goes, he's kind of like the badass stoic, you know, cigarette smoking guy. But there's a lot more to him than that, that isn't explained in this first half. But when you sort of know what his motives are, you can see it. So there's a lot of attention to detail in the characters and how they express themselves. But he's sort of just like, you know, being his typical badass self and just like knowing everything about how these criminals work. And they're having this conversation, and Akane is in the passenger seat, just sitting, like, you know, looking kind of sad, wondering about what's going on. And he's just there relaxed, like, with his feet up on the dashboard and his arms behind his back, where the steering wheel just moves itself. And at the time, I'm just kind of like, man, this is the future. And now I'm like, man, this is the present. 5 years later. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's weird, because Psycho-Pass was one of those sci-fi movies, but kind of near-future sci-fi movies more than far-future. The interesting thing that I found about Psycho-Pass was just how similar it was in certain ways to something like Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex and Second Gig. Mm. From the perspective of, you mentioned the breather episodes, kind of. They were more breather than filler, I've got from my perspective. But one of the things that I thought was interesting about Psycho-Pass was that Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex approached it from kind of a different perspective. You had a society that was trying to be ordered. You know, they were trying to bring a certain order to society, but the elements were actually... It's kind of... when I think about it, Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex is kind of what you had before Psycho-Pass. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Before you got to that ordered society, or maybe just after the revolution of that ordered society, you end up with a situation that would be like Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, where you have lots of different factions, you know, vying for control. You have the elements that were bubbling under the surface. They're now more out in the open and taking action. You know, you have more of, you have more of the dystopia on full display. Rather than hidden away, you know, and only coming out for secret meetings where they all wear hoods and robes and everyone greets each other with secret handshakes.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Because, like, here, it's everything is, again, it's all clinical and put together. Everyone is content, you know. Yeah. There's not a lot of struggle, there's not a lot of problems. But all of the sort of negativity being shown is, again, it's sort of below the surface stuff. You know, the enforcers are just doing their jobs, and a lot of them seem like they'd be normal people in this day and age. But obviously they're there for a reason. Like, society has deemed them unfit to just be normal members of society. And it's just because of just normal problems that they faced. And again, with the characters, I think the characters are really interesting as well.
Yeah.
Like, I know I say this a lot, but for me, characters make a lot of what makes anime good.
Yeah.
And as I said, you got Shinya, he's cool, and he's like pretty deep. You have Ginoza, who seems really serious, but has his reasons. And then you have Masuoka Tomomi, who is like, he's a lot older. He's been alive before the system was established at a time probably similar to ours, and he's seen the whole change. And somehow he ended up swept up within the whole thing. And then you have Akane, who is very interesting because she's supposed to be a very good fit, but she's been described as, you're almost like someone who was born before the system was established.
Yeah.
So she questions things and she's sort of working from the inside and following the rules, but at the same time, like, she not does her own thing, but she does these things that are considered like question that would seem normal and sensible and reasonable and, you know, nice to us, but to the system it's kind of like, what do you think you're doing?
Yeah. And did you ever watch Equilibrium?
No.
Equilibrium was one of those strange sci-fi movies with Christian Bale in it, where the whole idea was that you couldn't feel anything. You weren't allowed to have emotions because emotions were bad, and everyone took this medication to stop them having emotions. And Christian Bale, you know, one day he suddenly he forgets to take his medication, and suddenly he starts feeling emotions that he never had before. And he realizes that he can't live without them. They basically make him a complete human. They make him understand a variety of things. And so he kind of becomes the outsider looking into a society that's totally broken but looks like it's actually functioning. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I think there's a lot in common there. And it might even be inspired by something like that, because the whole, you know, crime coefficient psychopath system, in a way, it's like, it's not established what exactly constitutes the crime coefficient, but you can kind of infer it.
Yeah.
And put very simply, the more worked up you get, the more, like, generally speaking, or at any given moment, the higher a person's psychopath tends to get. And with that, as people get worked up in the real world, the more erratic their behavior becomes. And just going back to characters for 1 second, because one thing I wanted to point out, the main character, Akane Sinemori, I like her a lot because she is, in a lot of ways, what I consider to be a good, strong female protagonist.
Yes.
Because at one point, she's going through all of this stuff. The first episode was absolutely, like, horrible, just something that, like, most people shouldn't experience. And when she's speaking to her friends, she's kind of, they're kind of like, man, how did you get a job like that? And she doesn't understand herself, and she, with no ideas left, she goes, maybe I'm just thick-skinned. And they kind of laugh, but at the same time, she's the kind of person who can experience a lot of tough situations and not get too worked up about it.
Yeah.
And there's a plot point where, for some of her reason, her crime coefficient seems to remain relatively stable, like, at all times. And I think that's a very key, not like just a key part to the character, but I think it's sort of like an interesting aspect to the show, in that, you know, maybe there's a thing to this sort of mental stability thing that's going on, but at the same time, these crime coefficients, they do suppress people a lot. But there's a lot going on in this.
Yeah.
And a lot of people sort of say, there's people who seem to really like psychopaths, and then there's people who are just kind of like, oh, it was all right. And they don't really give a reason for why they have such a lukewarm response to it. But in my opinion, it's, like, really, really well thought out. And every time I watch it, I, like, get really into it. And then after a while, I stop watching it and I forget about it. And then I watch it again. I'm like, oh, this is the best thing ever again. No matter how many times I see it. And I'm watching it in English, and the English dub's pretty good. It's a bit shonky, like the first episode.
Yes.
But then after a while, it, like, I guess the actors kind of settle into their roles and start sounding somewhat more natural. So it's an example of a good dub as well.
Fantastic. Right, that was Psychopaths from Lewis. That was part one of Psychopaths, I should say. And I talked about Metropolis, so that's your lot for the day. We are going to be back next week, hopefully with a returning Tucky. But until then, I have been Rob.
I've been Lewis.
Just a reminder, you can catch all of our shows on iTunes, Mixcloud, and YouTube. So if you are listening on iTunes, do leave us some feedback, leave us a review, leave us a rating. The reviews do help us improve, so, you know, let us know what you think.
And share with your friends, tell them about us, and tell them about anime, because anime is cool. It makes you think.
Yes. So until next week, we'll see you all later.
Keep your hues clear, guys.